from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them, southhillskia.net. Fan text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say, there's never a fee unless we get money for you. We want you back with us after, that's not what I'm supposed to read right now. The Fan Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Joining us now, right? We have the music for him. Do we have some music for him?
So we have to get the music. We have to change up the music a little bit. We got to get it in the system installed and fixed so that we make sure that we're compliant with everything.
What the hell is going on down there?
Because you weren't here last week, Paul.
I was here. We had someone else's. Ray. We couldn't do Everybody Loves Raymond.
I'm going to load those into the system and we'll be all good. And,
all right. Well, just put on the man we call Destiny's Child, Andrew Destin, who is standing by. Hello, Andrew. How are you?
Do well, Paul. It's been a few weeks. Hope you've been well.
Yeah.
I've gotten a chance to talk to you.
Yeah, I've been the last two Tuesdays I was out for some reason. I forget. One, I was sick, and the other one, I forget. Who knows? They all run together, sir. Pretty big news on the Pirates front yesterday with O'Neill Cruz moving to center field. I don't know. I think that the best thing I can say about it is the timing is good because now we have a month to figure out if he can play, correct?
Yes, and I'm sure that you have as many thoughts as I do on this matter because I think there's a lot of places to go. But I think the important thing here is that the timing of it is good. Let's call spade a spade. This team is not in postseason contention. These games are relatively close to meaningless in terms of wins and losses, so you never want to truly treat regular season games like spring training games, but to some extent these are. You got to figure out some of your roster decisions for 2025, and that starts right now, not just with O'Neill Cruz, but with things like bringing Henry Davis back up and theoretically giving him a lot of playing time, not to segue the conversation, but this next stretch is all about figuring out things for 2025, and if playing O'Neill Cruz in center field is something the Pirates are serious about for next year, this is the time to figure that out.
Yeah, and I think one of the things about it, Andrew, is if you count the DH, you have nine players, right? Nine position players if you count the DH. I don't care about anything else for the rest of this season, but this next month, they've got to figure out what their best combination of nine is and whether or not they have nine because they probably need to go get a first baseman. Isn't that what this next month has got to be? Figure out who your best nine is for next year.
Yes, exactly. And I think part of figuring out who that best nine is includes guys who are not currently in the majors right now. I mean, I would say some really important developments to keep tabs on in AAA Indianapolis would be, how is Jack Suwinski doing? He struggled mightily at the start of this month and has started to heat up a little bit, but I would imagine we see him in some capacity down the stretch. That's more speculation than anything, but if he's somebody they would hope to be a significant contributor this coming year in a way that he wasn't this year, you'd have to imagine he gets another shot up here. And somebody that we haven't seen any runway with is Leover Peguero, and now seemingly there's some opportunities there at shortstop, which, albeit Isaiah Kiner-Falefa figures to get the lion's share of those starts for the time being, but with O'Neill Cruz now moving to the outfield, you have to figure this is an opportunity for Peguero to get up here and at least get some starts down the stretch in September. So to your point, Paul, this is about figuring out who the nine best guys are, and I don't think that's just the current 26-man roster. When the roster expands a little bit come September, there are going to be a couple of guys that I figure get up here, whether that's Suwinski, Peguero, a Nick York or a Billy Cook, both guys who are Rule 5 eligible at the end of this year if they're not added to the 40-man roster. There's some guys that we have to keep tabs on here moving forward. These are not meaningless baseball games by any means. They're meaningless in terms of wins and losses.
Right. I mean, I think the big thing, too, you know, we talk about all of these other developments, but you know, Joey Bart got hurt, and that's why Henry Davis is up, but if Bart comes back in the next 8 to 10 days or whatever, I don't care what anyone says. I know Rowdy's a fan favorite and all this other stuff. You got to start playing Henry Davis a little bit at first, right? Just to see if you see what it looks like.
I don't know. I think you could. I think that's an opportunity there. I mean, to no disservice to Yasmani Grandal, who has really played well the last couple of months, except for the defense last night with allowing 8 stolen bases. I'm sure we can get into that if we'd like to. But regardless, if I were running the Pirates, my thought process would be whenever Joey Bart comes back, which they believe that left hamstring strain to be relatively minor, if and when he comes back, I would personally prioritize getting Yasmani Grandal out of town or relegating him truly to a reserve role and giving Bart and Davis, you know, have them split time between DH and catcher, even though Derek Shelton said that in the immediate future, there aren't really any plans to put Davis at DH. I don't know if first base is the option for either of those guys, because frankly, Andy Rodriguez is coming back next year from a pretty serious elbow injury. I think he's a candidate to play first base as well next year. I wouldn't discredit that notion by any means, rather than inserting him right back into playing catcher off pretty serious surgery. So, sure, you could consider moving Davis there, but I would personally, in terms of the 2025 outlook, I would look at Rodriguez as an option for first base in addition to just the Henry Davis conversation, which I fully understand.
I'm just saying they've got to figure something out with Henry Davis, don't they? They've got to figure out what they have in him. And to me, that means if they have 40 games, I don't even know what they have left, however many games they have left, he needs to play just about every single one of them.
Yes, absolutely. And I think the position stuff is maybe a little bit secondary to the at-bats. And that's not to say that defense isn't important. It's very important, as evidenced by this year's team having a number of guys at various positions who have underperformed defensively. You know, Brian Reynolds, Jack Suwinski, O'Neill Cruz, to a lesser extent, some other guys, like they acquired Brian De La Cruz, who hasn't been great defensively and right. But the most important thing here is getting Henry Davis's bat right and figuring out if it can play at the major league level. Because, you know, sometimes these guys will come out and say things that aren't wholly true, but General Manager Ben Charrington yesterday, in speaking with the media, made a great point. It's that Henry Davis has hit at all levels except for the major league level. If he can't do that here, then this is just a further data point for a guy who really has struggled in the big leagues. But if these next 30-some-odd games demonstrate that Davis has figured something out, that's a significant development for 2025. Conversely, if he struggles again, well, then that's a heck of a lot of data points to suggest that this guy really has his work cut out to ever solidify himself as a big leaguer.
Yeah, for real. I mean, I think that's amazing. If you think about it, he's hit at every level. Back to O'Neill Cruz. What if it doesn't work?
I am fully suggesting that that is a possibility. These are my words, my opinions. I am fully skeptical of this. I'm not convinced that this is going to work swimmingly, and I'll throw out a name that was, you know, suggested by many Pirates fans as a logical candidate for the Pirates to get at the trade deadline in Jazz Chisholm, who's now moved back to the infield with the Yankees since the Marlins dealt him. But Jazz was a shortstop. They moved him to center, was not a great defensive center fielder. I understand that there's a lot of examples of guys from the infield moving out to the outfield and finding success, but I'm not by any means suggesting that this is a given. O'Neill Cruz, it's pretty well documented a couple of years ago that when they tried him out in the outfield a little bit, that he was not a fan of that he wanted to figure it out at shortstop. I understand this year, you know, second most errors in baseball, but I thought there were a lot of moments where he looked like a major league shortstop. So I understand the strategy. Don't get me wrong. This is a guy who's athletic, 6'7", has a rocket of an arm. Maybe it plays better in the outfield, but there will be some growing pains. I imagine this will, you know, be something that takes a long time to figure out. And I don't know if we're going to have a concrete answer as to whether this will work until spring training, until next season, when you get more reps under his belt. But I genuinely do remain skeptical about this and think this is by no means quick switch. He will move here and now become a gold glove defender. I think there's a lot of work to be done here, and it's going to take cooperation on both sides between Cruz and the Pirates to work through what I figure to be some inevitable growing pains.
All right. My question is, with respect to Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, I mean, is he a legitimate option for shortstop next season? Is that part of the plan?
Yes, but also, in my opinion, no. I think he is certainly part of the plan for 2025 there to be an everyday shortstop. But I say no in the sense that this guy's best skill is when he's your super utility guy. And that's not to say that if you play him too much that his bat will fall out of line or things like that, but this is a career year for IKF. You can look at Baseball Reference's page. He has been a good hitter this year, and certainly an above average league hitter. But over his major league career, his best value has been the ability to bounce around the diamond and play in the outfield, play up the middle, came up as a catcher. So to making him everyday shortstop, yes, he can provide gold glove caliber defense there. But if you overplay him and overextend him there, I feel like that reduces the value a little bit. I would say what I'm most interested about for 2025 is that, does this open up a lane for Leover Peguero, a guy that seemingly most of us, myself included, had considered, well, there weren't any legitimate opportunities for him in 2024, struggled down the stretch in 2023. Maybe he had fallen out of favor with the Pirates, but the reality is that Peguero is just 23 years old. He was the centerpiece of that Starling Marte trade a number of years ago, and maybe the jury, you know, the verdict isn't out on Leover Peguero, that they still hold him in some regard. So I would say he's somebody that I have my eyes on for down the stretch here, but also for 2025 as a legitimate option at shortstop. I think he's somebody to seriously consider in addition to IKF at shortstop for next season.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing. It's going to be very interesting to see, because I thought they brought IKF here to you know, sort of be a utility guy. But the other part of it is I thought that it might give them an avenue to trade Cabrian Hayes in the offseason and make him your third baseman.
Yeah, I think that's something to consider as well. I mean, that's more speculation than anything, not anything that I'm reporting or I really have seen anybody else throw out there. But I think it's something you certainly have to wonder about is, will Cantaleva move to third base? Will that be something that's more in the horizons? And even if Hayes stays on the roster, which as of right now, I have no reason to believe otherwise, Cantaleva could maybe be a guy who spells Hayes more frequently at third and helps him manage that back a little bit more. Because when it's been documented that when Hayes plays every day, that's a lot of stress on his body. So maybe this is a way to help him there. And maybe that's the best way to maximize IKF's value is that he gets, you know, 3 to 4 starts a week at shortstop, another 2 at third base. Maybe you give him 1 a week at second base to give Gonzalez a day off, or you just give IKF a day off. I don't think, in my estimation personally, I would not expect for IKF to start 140 games at shortstop next year. I think we see this more as a rotating thing, and there are a number of guys who could play there, IKF, of course, being the chief one right now. But I would say that there's other options, and it's not as simple as just saying, okay, Cruz is moving to the outfield. Now this is IKF's job at shortstop for 2025, and nobody else is in competition. I think that's probably too simplistic of looking at it right now.
That's the thing, though, that you want to try and get a lot of answers here in the next month, and I think those are really important questions to ask. The left side of your infield and first base. I mean, they're not going to re-sign Rowdy Tellez, right?
I think it's on the table. I mean, if he comes back at a reasonable enough contract this year for $3.2 million, he's endeared himself to the fan base seemingly in the last couple of months, swung a solid bat since the beginning of June. I think it's on the table. I can't imagine that we're speaking in absolutes here on April, August 27th or whatever it is, and saying that Rowdy Tellez won't come back. I think that remains on the table just in terms of what he provides in the clubhouse, what he provides as a solid option at first base. I would imagine they would look to upgrade that if they could, but I would not rule out a reunion with Rowdy Tellez over the offseason. I think he remains certainly an option that they would consider.
That's the thing. I mean, you know, I don't know that I would hate that either. By the same token, it's funny when you talk about Rowdy Tellez, right? I mean, he had that really, really hot streak. And I always, you know, I keep trying to convince myself that his numbers are better than they actually are. You know what I mean? He's a negative WAR player. His OPS is less than 700. I think, and when you look at his home runs, he's given them 11, you know. What's he going to finish with? Maybe 15, 16? So, I don't know. I wouldn't hate it, but I don't know that I would love it either.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the way to look at it, is that there are other spots, other options that they may potentially need to upgrade at. First base is probably the largest one of them, or most sizable one of them right now. The roster, how it's going to be constructed next year, remains to be seen, right? Because how do you factor in certain variables, like right now, what are you going to get out of Henry Davis? Does he factor into plans there at first base, or can he not be counted upon in 2025? Whether that's Davis or Andy Rodriguez, or if you'd consider a position change for a guy like Joey Bart. I'll even throw out there the idea of what if Brian Reynolds is moved from left field to first base, just given his defensive struggles in left field this year. And, you know, if we really go down a theoretical rabbit hole, conceivably you could do something like move O'Neill Cruz from center to left to, you know, alleviate his workload a little bit, move Reynolds to the infield, and then maybe your number one option becomes you need to go get a bona fide star center fielder, right? So I think it's not as simple as just go get a first baseman, the roster is solved. I think there's so much to work through these next 30 games that will at least help bring some clarity to what the Pirates are going to do in 2025. I think if you were asking me right now, point blank, what are the spots that are most important, it's clear. It's first base and center field. Right now they're trying to figure out center field. I don't know that this is the, you know, the final solution.
What happens to Nick York?
Yeah, I mean, that's key too. Right now they're playing him a lot in the outfield in the minors. This is a guy who traditionally has been a middle infielder, came up a second baseman, was a shortstop in high school. In the outfield, I watched him out with Indianapolis last week when they were playing out in Columbus. This is a guy who's still figuring out his way in center field. I would say Billy Cook is probably further along in terms of being a center fielder at the major league level right now. But both of those guys, you figure they have to get chances at the big leagues at some point here, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, like, you've got, you know, a couple of guys down, you know, like you said, Sawinski, Peguero, you know, there's a few guys that you got to kind of figure out, but Nick York is one that they actually traded for, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And York is one that has, you know, torn the cover off the ball in the minors, and so has Billy Cook, frankly, the two of them since they acquired each of those guys. So they each have to get chances, I figure, at the big league level at some point this year, but I think part of the reason why we're still seeing them in the minors is because to that previous point of the roster being so fluid is they're trying to figure out in the minors, okay, can Nick York be a center fielder? Can he be an outfielder? Can Billy Cook be counted upon to play up there? Or is his best spot at second base? Because if either of those guys is to be depended upon as a middle infielder, well, there's kind of a logjam there at second base with Nick Gonzalez getting the playing time there and other guys who are factoring in. So not to mention with IKF now being on the scene and being a versatile guy who can bounce around. So I would say that, you know, the hope maybe with either York or Cook is that they can figure it out as outfielders and become serviceable enough outfielders. You know, each of them can play the corner spots too. That seems to be something to consider as well. So the factors at play here are, can O'Neill Cruz be an everyday center fielder? And if not, maybe factoring into the equation aside from just Jack Sawinski are Nick York and Billy Cook, though neither of them, in my estimation, would be a plus defender, which O'Neill Cruz has the potential to be. In terms of sheer athleticism, I think it's no question. It's no disservice to anybody else. Cruz is an elite athlete when healthy.
Right. I mean, that's the big thing. It's just now you've got to figure out if he can actually handle the position. Now, when is he supposed to first start playing in center field again?
Yeah, I don't have a firm date, but, you know, I asked Derek Shelton and Ben Charrington about as much, and it seems like the plan is to DH him for a few days here, get him some outfield reps during pregame work and, you know, individual work. So if I had to guess, sometime during the Cleveland series, which Noah Hiles will be covering that for us at the Post-Gazette. So if I had to guess, it'll probably be sometime in Cleveland. But, you know, maybe it could happen as soon as Wednesday, or I wouldn't expect that, but it's possible. I imagine he DHs again today, and Derek Shelton probably will have an answer on that, but DH for the time being.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a big thing. I think that would be a waste of a lot of athleticism and length and all that other stuff, but is that a position that he could ultimately end up being?
What, is that in center or in DH?
DH.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something to consider. I think that's the reality is that, and I would throw this out there as well, is that both Derek Shelton and GM Ben Charrington suggested when I asked him about O'Neill Cruz's left ankle injury last season, I asked if that factored into this decision at all. And, you know, they confirmed as much that it was one of the factors was to move him to center field from shortstop because of that injury, whether it was, you know, that it delayed the inevitable of figuring out if he could play at shortstop or if it was based off of the long-term implications. So if the ankle injury is still something that's kind of lingering, which it is, we've seen it flare up at numerous times this year, then you have to wonder if DH would be an opportunity for Cruz moving forward. Personally speaking, I think that's further down the line than some long-term plans starting in 2024 or 2025, but I'm not throwing it off the table by any means. It seems like that ankle injury is certainly still something that he's recovering from. I imagine next year he'll be in a much better spot physically, but That being said, giving him more time at DH can only help him with his ankle.
Yeah, there's no question about that. I think that's going to be really, I think, an important thing to watch, just because from the standpoint of they have a lot of, and I was just saying this to City Limits, they have a lot of things that are going to be worth paying attention to in what is otherwise a lost month.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be so much, right? And I think one thing that I really have my eyes on, too, is the pitching, right? I mean, I would say that how they manage Paul Skenes' innings here down the stretch, and does he end up making it all the way through September or just through the middle of September? Same with Jared Jones getting the ball tonight. Like, he's probably about 25 to 30 innings shy of his career high as a professional. I imagine they want to get him at least to that number, or a little bit higher of it. So, you know, I think a lot of the discourse, and rightfully so, should be on the position players and where guys are playing and whether or not they can hit at the big league level. But I'd say there's some pitching things that are very important, too. How is Luis Ortiz or Bailey Falter managed down the stretch? Both of these guys getting lengthened out more so than last year. I think there's so much to be curious about. And even on the bullpen side, right? Colin Holderman and Carmen Majinski eventually should be coming back. Does David Bednar figure it out down the stretch or continue with what's been, you know, really a challenging season for the closer? I think there's so much to be keeping tabs on, especially as it pertains to 2025, just given how much has, for lack of better phrasing, how much has gone wrong or not met expectations in 2024 for this team.
Jones gets the ball tonight, like you said. What are you expecting to see from him?
I mean, I saw him in Columbus when he was pitching for Indianapolis in his final rehab start. Based on what I saw then, this guy's back. Like, the velocity's there. The off-speed pitches are all there. He's struck out 10 guys in 5 innings. That being said, that's minor league competition, so it's a little bit different than facing big league hitters. But my expectation tonight is that, you know, maybe they'll let him go out to, I'll throw out a hypothetical number of 85, 90 pitches. Hopefully they get him through 5 or 6 innings. I imagine that would be their hope for the Pirates. But the velocity is there. The pitch mix is there. The location is there. I imagine he'll probably be pretty amped up at the start. Wouldn't be surprised if he hits a few triple digits a couple times early on. So I imagine it'll be worth watching. It'll be a show, and it's just a matter of what does that mean for what's to come beyond this start, because he's got a few more ahead of him in the big leagues this year, but it's a matter of how many and how deep do they let him go in these outings.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the key with him. So you've got him. It's funny, you look at the bullpen. How are they in a place where twice in the last 3 games they need to use a position player to pitch?
It's a great question. The first part is that they are in the midst of a stretch of 13 games in as many days, so no off days, which does complicate matters a little bit. But yeah, it's been a lot of starters not going deep in games, right? Mitch Keller went 4 innings last night. Jake Woodford got rocked in that start against the Reds on Saturday. Those are 2 factors that, if you're the Pirates, you're not really hoping for or banking on. You're really hoping for the inverse, that these guys are able to go deep in games for you, and that has not been the case. So I think that's been a big reason why this has been such a challenging stretch for the bullpen, is that it's a domino effect, right? The starters aren't getting deep in games. They're not pitching well enough. They're not keeping it competitive. So that's why you see Rowdy Tellez come out to finish off games twice in the last 3 nights. But I don't know if there's anybody to place that indictment on. I don't know that that's something you can really chastise manager Derek Shelton for. I think that's just more a matter of your starters aren't getting it done. And because of that, consequently, if your bullpen guys, your bulk guys who aren't your top pitchers out of the bullpen aren't getting it done, well, that's why you're going to see Rowdy Tellez, because Domingo Germán is giving up 8 runs and giving up a grand slam.
Right. But I said maybe the symbol of the Pirates to me in my lifetime was, I was there on Saturday when they had the Hall of Fame night. They had a sold out stadium and they had fireworks night. And we had Bailey, we had Old Yeller pitch in that game. We had who was it that started the game? The young kid, the minor leaguer that got rocked. And then they had Rowdy Tellez finish the game. I'm like, that's sort of the Pirates in a nutshell, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just a little bit. It was a cool moment. I'll say that pregame for me, you know, just growing up in the Bay Area, but certainly a Giants fan, and seeing Barry Bonds there interacting with the crowd or the reporters on hand, enjoying that moment. But yeah, once the game started, things certainly took a turn for the worse. But in terms of the pregame ceremony, it's certainly cool to talk with all sorts of people like KT and, you know, Steve Blass and Manny Singhi. And it was just, it was a cool day, certainly beforehand. But once the first pitch was thrown, I think, you know, a lot of people may be disappointed on that one.
All right, Andrew, thank you so much, buddy. We'll do it again soon.
Sounds like a plan, Paul. Good talking to
you. All right, my man, there's Andrew Destin. Destiny's Child, it's 93.7 The Fan.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You know, I usually don't agree with Stephen A. Smith on much, but as I looked over my shoulder, he has the top five storylines of the college football season. He's actually probably very close, I would say, to what probably the top stories are. His number one story is, how will Alabama do under, what's his name, Kalen DeVore.
Kalen DeVore, yeah. That's a huge story because you're replacing arguably the greatest coach of all time.
Number two, Saban. Prime.
That's a huge story.
I think that people are missing the whole story on Prime. His son's going to go to the NFL next year. After this season, he's going to declare for the draft. And Prime is not going to be at Colorado next year.
Well, he has another son, a younger son, right? He has two sons there.
So
he'll probably have to go be there for two more years.
Well, I mean, can he survive two more years? Really is a bigger question, isn't it?
Well, Colorado is getting so much national attention, they're not going to get rid of him. Unless something completely boils over.
Yeah. But I can't imagine he's going to work, right?
No, he's not. They're
not
going to
work out.
They're not going to win more than five games this year.
And not just that. I think that. So that's number two. The third question, and I think this is a really important question. Ryan Day. Now, obviously, I think Michigan is going to, you know, be completely a shell of themselves with all the allegations and the coaching staff suspensions and all the other stuff going on. I don't think they recruited really well. So Ryan Day should absolutely beat Michigan, but what if he doesn't?
Then you're talking potentially he's going to be on the hot seat.
So that was
considerable hot seat.
Yeah, number four, Lincoln Riley at USC. He's another guy. I think he's a fraud.
I don't think it's that big of a story.
I don't either. I think he's a fraud too. But I think he'll get fired at the end of this year if he's probably not going to get it done.
I don't. Lincoln Riley is beloved in college football. Right. He would be scooped up in a second. I don't think USC moves off him that quickly.
And then Notre Dame. I don't know. Notre Dame ranked in the top 10.
We overhype and overvalue Notre Dame every year.
Yeah.
Everyone does.
So those are the stories. Stephen A. Smith, I think he's actually right about some of them.
I think Deion Sanders and Kalen DeVore especially.
Did you see Coach Prime? He banned a reporter.
He did.
And he also was refusing to talk to a columnist. Like, what are we talking about here?
And the worst part about it is, too, Paul, that Deion Sanders was a member of the media working with the NFL Network for numerous years. He knows what their reporters' jobs are. He knows what they're doing. And he's taking everything personal. And that's what I don't understand about it.
Well,
he's been in both shoes. Why doesn't he understand? Why doesn't it just sit in for him and make sense that the reporters have a job? They're not trying to make this personal against you. They're looking to do their job. That's what I don't get.
Yes. Well, I mean, again, I think that it's if you're him, why are you insecure? You know what I'm saying? As you just said, guy's beloved. He's beloved at Colorado. He's beloved out there. Why are you so insecure that people... And here's the other part of it. And this is what bothers me more than anything. Okay? Uh-oh, big-name quarterback on the market. Bailey Zappe has been cut.
Oh, here we go. How about this, Paul? This is actually bigger news than that. At least Steeler news. the Washington Commanders are releasing Martavis Bryant, whose comeback hit a speed bump, according to Ian Rappaport. He had a touchdown in their final game. Would you bring Martavis Bryant back to the Steelers? I would. I would sign him back to the practice squad.
I mean, I guess maybe back to the practice squad. But I'm just saying, do we really, really need to have Back to the Future all the time?
No, but when you look at the Steeler wide receiver room, would you rather have Martavis Bryant, who, yes, has not played in the NFL in years, over Dez Fitzpatrick? Over Scotty Miller? Over Quez Watkins? I'd rather have the upside of Martavis Bryant, thinking that it's still there.
It's just funny. It's just funny, like, every time someone gets released that used to be with the Steelers. Well, what about him? He's a possibility. Anyway, Bailey Zabappe. But back to college football, the thing about Coach Prime, you can't be this guy who always is you know, talking loud and proud and everything else, right? You can't be that guy. And then when you get criticism, you're upset about it.
You got to be able, if you dish out the heat, you have to be able to take the heat too. You know, if you talk crap, you got to be able to take it. And that's just something that's a problem with Deion Sanders. He can't take it.
Yeah.
And he thinks it's personal when it's really not.
It isn't, for real.
And I don't know. It just seems like the culture in Colorado for that program is just
right.
Not a good one. Like, I would not want to transfer there and play if I was a college football player. I just feel like it's more of a TV show than anything.
Right. Well, again, I think that's the most that's the most important thing to them is the TV show, right? The bling, the you know, the video stuff. You know how ridiculous it is? Deion Sanders and they don't even use the Colorado PR guys, really, for the most part. Like, if you want to just set up stuff with Deion and with some of his players, you have to go through their, like, their media company or their publicist or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah.
Which is silly. But again, if he wins, it's one thing. But when you talk a lot of trash and you don't win, you just sound loud and stupid. And that's what he does. And I love Deion. You know that.
Yeah.
So it's just important. It's important to remember that that's what they have to do. I don't know. That's what they have to do in order to, you know, make Colorado relevant, I guess. But I do think it's going to be very interesting to see how this Kalen DeBoer does at Alabama. You're following Nick Saban. You're in the SEC. You're bumping, you know, you're bumping heads with some of the best coaches and, you know, best teams. And, you know, it's not going to be like the Pac-12.
No, and you add Oregon. You add, not Oregon, Oregon going to the Big Ten. You add Oklahoma and you add Texas. And the SEC becomes considerably harder than it already was as the best conference.
Right. That's the big thing. And I think, you know, I look at him, and here's the other thing I wonder with him. Here's his resume. Sioux Falls as a receivers coach. Washington High School as a, I don't know, an assistant coach. Sioux Falls again as the offensive coordinator. Sioux Falls as the head coach. Southern Illinois is the offensive coordinator. Eastern Michigan is the offensive coordinator. Fresno State is the offensive coordinator. Indiana is the offensive coordinator. Fresno State is the head coach. Washington is the head coach. Does that sound like he's got a lot of experience in the SEC?
Not in the SEC. It sounds like a lot of experience.
It sounds like he's worked in a lot of places, but not in the SEC. Not even in the...
And you're coaching at Alabama, one of the most historic programs in all of college football, but usually there's a guy that's either coached in the SEC or has been around for a very long time before taking that job.
Now, that being said, his overall record is 104-12. So he's obviously had success as a head coach.
Right. Very good at Washington.
He was very good at Washington. It might actually turn out to be a situation of where he might have thought about staying at Washington.
I thought he was going to.
He should have. He could have been there forever. You know? Anyway.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.